All right, we're going to get this process started there. I'm just going to go ahead and greet the audience by saying welcome all to the Hashtag Blue and Green podcast with Major Cecil Davis. I am your host, Major Davis, retired U.S. Air Force. Today, I'll be speaking with Mr. Kenneth Wayne Ford, Jr. The broad mission of our podcast is to foster an open communication channel between civilian law enforcement officers and military armed personnel so that events of January 6, 2021 never happen again. Specific to our show today, I will further characterize our mission as the following. The Hashtag Blue and Green podcast is also a platform to allow civilian government employees an opportunity to talk about their experiences, accomplishments, struggles, and issues going in their life and in the world. Therefore, as a former member of the agencies with federal government, we will use this platform in order to make others aware, Mr. Ford, of your story and some issues confronting you in particular and federal employees in general. As we press on, I want to let it be known that the motto of the Hashtag Blue and Green podcast is quite simply, Amor Civitatis, love of community. Today's show will examine the dilemmas faced by and still being faced by Mr. Kenneth Wayne Ford, Jr. Mr. Ford, please introduce yourself to our listening audience by giving your different jobs within the federal government, along with any accolades and awards, your educational accomplishments, and more importantly, you may want to start off with your family upbringing and any other pertinent information you think would be appropriate. So without further ado, Mr. Ford.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Major Davis. Yes, my name is, and thank you for having me on the show. I was born and raised in the Washington, D.C. area. I grew up in Prince George's County. My education accomplishments, I have a bachelor's of management organization from the University of Miami. I have a bachelor's of computer science and computer networking from Strayer University, as well as a master of science in information systems from Strayer University. The positions I have had in the federal government, I started my federal government career as a uniform division in the Secret Service. Then I went to the National Security Agency as a computer scientist. In between those, I was in the government a total of 7 years. I've won cash awards in the United States Secret Service, as well as the National Security Agency.
Okay, well, I'm affiliated with a campus, college campus, so I tend to pick up some of the jargon of the young students, though. But in a sense, you showed up and showed out. But that's a good thing. That is a good thing. I tell you what, I'd like to start off with the first question. You know, when I look at your career starting out, how do you feel about the characterization? You were definitely on the yellow brick road, to borrow an expression from the Wizards of Oz. You were definitely on that yellow brick road, right place, right time. How do you feel about that characterization?
Yes, I can go along with that. I can go along with that. I mean, you know, when you say that, it doesn't come without any, you know, obstacles or problems or concerns.
You bet. I know. And I think that I heard from your piece, because I reviewed the three parts from your mom's piece that she did for an interview. And then yours also, you mentioned that you're going to be giving back. And that is so good to hear a brother of accomplishment making that statement. I'm going to give back. I'm going to let, you know, those coming up behind me to know that I'm going to reach down and pull them up there. And so I'm in that same mindset. You know, like say I reached 74 years of age back in September. So I'm still reaching back, like, you know, and when I heard you say that, it kind of just, I kind of welled up a little bit, say, hey, I'm not the only one out there. So that's great. Cutting somewhat to the chase, you were definitely hampered in your progress and subsequently were stopped in your mercurial rise and success. Do you think that your golden boy start may have intimidated or otherwise overly concerned about your storybook start may have caused some to throw a monkey wrench into your career path? You know, and I can kind of compare that to Representative J.C. Watts. I don't know if you even remember who that was,
But, I exactly remember who J.C. was.
You bet. He was a congressman, representative out of Oklahoma. And man, he took off like a bat out of you know where, like a meteoric rise, et cetera. Then all of a sudden one day, because he's with the Republican Party, all of a sudden one day, he just said, you know, I'm going to give all this up and go back and be with my family in Oklahoma. And I thought, with my experience with the government, wait a minute, something just happened. He was moving too fast. So I draw that to your situation. You were really on the go, really on the go. And I wonder if that intimidated somebody or otherwise they wanted to slow you down and stop you. How you feel?
Exactly. I feel just like that. And I also can think of two other individuals. It was a African-American that was, the name escapes me, but he was due to be Speaker of the House. This was several years ago.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden he decides to get up and out and become president of the Negro College Fund. Was that Ponder? I don't remember the name.
Okay, no problem.
I do not remember the name.
Okay.
And then it's another gentleman at fault as Robert Johnson of BET. I always wonder, how can you go from being an owner of a TV station and then this up and decide which you have control over public opinion and dissemination of public opinion, and then go and, oh, well, I just want to be an owner of the NBA basketball team. That had always boggled my mind.
Yeah, and it does beg a question. Again, it falls into that same mode. Am I going too fast, you know, type of thing, like getting there, you know, and do the all-powerful, you know, the ones up above, like it's going to slow. I ain't talking about the one up above. I'm talking about the ones above you get the same way. I slow this guy down type of thing, because I've seen that happen. It kind of shadows some things happen in my career as well. But like I say, the program is not about me, though. But I might just touch on one or two things where as we get into the program today. And I'll just mention so I can draw a parallel to some things that have happened with you. So we'll know that, you know, you're not alone. I'm not alone. And any other brothers or anybody else, really, I had to be brothers who are listening, will be identified with that. Now, truthfully, my first impression of what happened to you was that you were being scapegoated. Just, you know, like I say, speak the truth. I really thought so, because to draw attention away from a higher up who otherwise would be implicated in some high level chicanery. At the level where you were with your security clearances, there weren't that many of y'all up there type of thing. So I kept thinking to myself as I was listening to your mom's presentation, listening to her notes and everything she was given. I said, you know one thing? You were picked because they said, let's pick someone who can take the fall for this. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know if you had that impression or not, but that was my first impression. So again, I thought maybe you might have been scapegoated to draw attention away from a higher up who otherwise would have been implicated in some higher chicanery. You know, your feelings about this possibility. I mean, they held on to you with bulldog tenacity. They weren't going to let you go. So it seemed like they got their scapegoat and they weren't going to let you go. How do you feel about that?
I've had several years to think about what happened. I've even come across some information or theories on what happened. I don't know exactly what happened. I just know that what I got convicted of and ultimately did time for, I didn't do that. I felt that I was doing somebody else's time. And even like when this was happening, when I was incarcerated and afterwards, I've always have come across information, read about information, come across information that can go in two or three different angles. At this point, I don't know what happened. I just know that I did not do and was guilty of what I was charged and convicted for.
Well, I certainly understand that, because you could feel that energy coming through. And I will tell you, you got somebody on your side. You have my bulldog tenacity and a couple other things. I mean, as I listened to the three parts of your mom's interview, I got to thinking, you know one thing? She's a super mom. Even beyond that, you know, she's a super woman. And superwoman, thy name is Gloria, you know, it's the name Gloria Ford, because I was really impressed with her research, everything. She was on point and all. Like, and I know you're very proud of her, but like I said, that's like the mama bear taking care of the cubs. Or that's right, like exactly. A lioness taking them little, yeah, you bet. Like,
doesn't matter how old you get.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, you know, like I say, because, you know, my background is, because of military aviation and all the ghetto. So I did Vietnam, the whole bit. So I've done combat aviation. But if I ever needed a wingman or a wing person, it would be her. And if I ever start up a company, like an investigative entity or whatever, she's hired. I don't need any resumes. Don't need no interviews. I'm going to take her on, because I was very impressed with it. And I took, I don't know, you use the expression copious notes. I ran out of notepapers. I guess I was writing on the back of books and everything, trying to keep up with all of her notes. But yeah, she was there for you. And like I say again, it's you know, it's awesome to see that. But it, you know, and I'm thinking now, in your struggles, can you identify, you know, or characterize any assistance that you received, like monetarily over the entire cycle? I understand the bills really went up there in dollar amount. And that's regrettable, because I got to think, I said, then the question came up, is there any assistance from anybody? Anybody throwing in anything? So I didn't get that impression that you were getting at, sister. You were kind of out there lone wolf.
Yes, it was just myself and my mother and father. Outside of that, we didn't receive any monetary assistance. Even we went to the lawyers. I forgot, one was, I forget the names now, when they were up on the Espionage Act of in 2000, I forget even the years now, the Espionage Act.
Oh yeah.
And when we called their offices, they said that they were really drained out from representing those gentlemen. And then it was even some people who I even had questioned, I called, and I had one or the other call, my mother or father call. And it was just basically like, you know, well, we can't help you. Even though it seemed like their efforts were focused on those individuals, and it was like, well, daggone, you know, what they're being said was, what they were being charged with, part of it was actually disclosure, but they just basically said, oh, retention, you know, and the thing about it is, when you read into, I may be digressing a little bit, but
that's
when
okay.
You
tell the story.
To the Espionage Act, you had to show, the prosecution had to show intent.
Okay.
The intent to injure the United States or to further the advances of a foreign power. And after the evidence was given in court, the judge took out the element of intent of any, and that's supposed to be Title 18 federal law. Intent supposed to be why, you know, the prosecution has to show intent, you know, not because I exist or you don't want me there, or anybody. Or you just figure, well, we don't sock it to this guy because we don't like him, or whatever the reason is, you know.
And that's so flippant, because I remember you made a comment there that he said, well, if you're in this court, you must be guilty. I'm thinking, what kind of kangaroo court is that? I mean, that's something you see on like a sci-fi movie. Nobody says that, but apparently it was said.
Exactly. The judge said it. The judge said it.
I know. That is fantastic. But like I say, that's kind of the state. And that's why I say, you know, there's something actually going on with the system, in the system. I'm not siding with the insurrectionists on January 6th. I'm not siding with them at all. Mm-hmm. But it's something that we have to take a look at. Now, I did have occasion on another podcast I researched. I did talk with someone, a relatively well-known lawyer that's in the D.C. area. And he painted such a gruesome picture. He said, you know, that's kind of like the way it is. Like when I worked at the Pentagon, the one colonel I first got there, I was a young captain, I got there. He said, you know, this whole process, and I guess he was speaking, you know, in a sense for the federal government. He said, the Pentagon, it's like a giant millstone. He said, if you get behind it, try to push it and make it go faster, you'll get a hernia. If you get in front of it, try to slow it down, you get crushed under the weight. It moves at its own speed regardless. And I think, what a dour outlook, but I'm thinking that, you know, from what we're talking about, it may not be too far off.
Exactly. And this is the thing. We, you know, as African Americans, we have to look at, explore and study COINTELPRO. And because when you look at the insurrection that took place on January 6th, there were mostly Caucasians raising Cain up in there. But here's the thing about it. Years ago, let's just say 10 years ago, if you were asked them, you know, and you have to ask them this today, is that, you know, or put in their ear, who do you think they practiced this on all these years to get to this point? What group of people in the United States did they practice this on? Now, when African-Americans were sitting up there saying this, they kind of, you know, turn a blind eye. We were just complaining. We just needed to, stop looking for handouts.
Okay.
Now look what's happening. We African-Americans, to tell you the truth, we're used to this stuff. I mean, we're used to, you know, being, you know, we just had to adapt.
Amen, brother.
You know, and now it's happening to them, and they feel like they're getting the short and the stick, and that they can't just go to work every day and live and get prosperity and peace and justice. So now they're realizing that. Then if you turn the page, if you tell them and say, well, who you think the system practiced this on?
That's a very good point, you know, because it conjures up in my mind, you know, I grew up as a project kid up here in West Dayton, Ohio. That's my home and whatnot. Now, of course, as you can well imagine back then, you know, on the streets and all, I mean, reefer, dope was running rampant, like, you know, but it was all on the west side, all in the projects. So it was no big deal. As soon as it made its way out there to what we call Dayton View, and up here in the white communities, oh my God, we got a crisis here. You know, we got a contagion, you know, type of thing. And I got to think, isn't that remarkable? It was tearing up the black community. Hey, it was no big deal, I guess, you know. And so now, you know, so I'm seeing the same thing here as well. You know, and then reaching back also to, you had mentioned some other cases that have been worked on. And I think there was a case with a Drake. And I think there's someone else where they seem to
Thomas Drake. Thomas Drake. It was a brother of Jeffrey. Was his name Jeffrey Sterling?
Sterling. Yes.
Yeah. I followed his case. Then it was also Manning. And the thing that got me was, you know, and of course Snowden.
Oh man, you know, don't even bring that up, man. I tell you, and you there at the NSA and all that stuff too, Snowden. Oh boy.
And Jeffrey Sterling. I never talked to him personally or had any communications with him.
Okay.
It seemed that, and I hate to say this, but it seemed like because he had a Caucasian wife, he was able to get some attention on his case.
Yeah.
That's my feeling with that one. To me, that's the only thing I will mention on that. Drake, I was told about Drake's case when I was in prison.
Okay.
And even that's one of the theories that they really, one of the theories, it came across my mind during that. And even this gentleman that got me, told me the case and knew him, told me that basically the National Security Agency wanted to win. So, so-called leakers and stuff like that, they wanted a win. So who else could who else could land or who could they get a win against?
Okay.
is a black male, you know?
Yeah.
And just, oh, well, you know, because after Drake was presented, represented by the public defenders and walked off with a slap on his hand of a misdemeanor.
Yeah, I saw that.
And once again, I contacted the public defender, more like public pretender, but that's a different story.
Play on words, I got you.
Yeah, so they all up and down, mine was a totally different case. And I said, well, okay, at one point it was a totally different case. My case didn't reach as high as his, but you threw the book at me, you know.
Yeah.
And so because he was a Caucasian male, you figure, oh, well, let's take it easy on him while we have we can do this African American in, and nobody can say, you know, nobody will say or do anything about it. A trash can Ken, you know, that's how I feel.
And I think, you know, from all I've seen and heard through the interviews and all that, you were justified feeling the way that you did. They were not justified in the way that they did. But again, they've had training using us as crash test dummies, you know, as punching bags and everything else. So, you know, hey, we can take it.
I lost contact from you.
I tell you, that's something else. But speaking of the assistants and all, I remember seeing something about there's a, matter of fact, the gentleman that interviewed you and your mom, he mentioned a delegation that's led by the Honorable Cynthia McKinney. And I know her really strong black woman, but are they still around? I'm sure they're still around, but are they still lending any assistance or did they ultimately help out?
Nah, not really too much. And he's a good friend of mine. We became great friends. His name is Dr. Randy Short.
Short, yeah, Dr. Short, yes.
Yes, we're great friends. He has helped me tremendously. Basically trying to get my story out, still trying to get my story out. He has been a tremendous help to me and also my family. Wealth of information.
You bet. He came across as being very earnest in that respect too. And I thought about it and I said, we know he's kind of a giant there. He's got his podcast, his shows that he does, and that gets attention. We're rising up there. We may not get to quite where he is right now, but we're working on it. But we want to use our platform as well because we have a lot of veterans, active duty personnel, dependents, and government employees, you know, such as, you know, you're formerly a government employee there. So we want to keep you all in the mix and all, and the word gets around. Because again, I'd mentioned like something that happened to me. There's really something there, you know, they had the Lieutenant Colonel Promotion Board type of thing. And I didn't make it. But then the Lieutenant Colonel Promotion Board, the crazy thing about it was they have a recording secretary, a young major was in there. He was up for promotion. They passed him over and they passed me over. I think they got to be kidding me. Then he published all kinds of discrepancies they had during the board, and the board president, Major General, two-star general, who was in retirement, actually came out and said, although unintentionally, I did in fact run the board illegally. He gave him the smoking pistol, but a friend of mine, a lawyer, told me, he said, you're not gonna prevail. I said, what do you mean? I said, he got the smoking pistol. He said, you got a conservative court too. He was right. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking, hey, you got the smoking pistol. What else do you need? Like, you know, the guy in action, but it didn't matter. So I transpose that to your situation. You know, when the deck's stacked against you, you got people going to just pile on, you know, and that's illegal in football. You can't go piling on, but they're piling on, man. You know, at every turn. And I heard that your attorney, it seemed like he had something going on the side. Someone had gotten to him.
Yeah.
What is that?
Exactly. I was represented at first. I was represented by the public defender's
office. Defender, yeah, I heard that, yeah.
And
yeah, I think it was a young lady, you know, but see, with the public defender, you get to thinking, you know, you get what you pay for, and in the case of a public defender, what? So I would have been suspect, especially as high a
like
profile
the Bible.
It was going to be. Yeah.
And I can give you an example. And this was one of the oddities of what happened in my case.
Okay.
They claimed that they found these top secret location on my in my car. And so then, come to find out, and they never clarify this or never, you know, they're not going to back down off of this or whatever.
Okay.
They're going to put it the way they want it put and make you look like in the worst light possible.
Yeah.
And then it was, I was going to, and I was emailed them by a contractor. And then they so happened the way they did, they so happened emailed the whole, all their offices. And, and I mean, I did, that wasn't on me. That was, you know, I just got this right on my regular email, my AOL account at the time.
Yeah.
And so, so they even pointed these high classified, you know, these little $64,000 words in the intelligence community. And so then it was even one map that showed up in this, in the vehicle I had at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but when I was going to that location, I didn't have that vehicle back then.
Mm-hmm.
I had a totally different vehicle.
You bet. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting up there like, how in the world? And even in that same vehicle after that time, sometimes they just randomly, when you drive it in, search your vehicle. And it was even searched. It wasn't in there then. So those are like types of things that I know that what happened and it didn't make sense. And basically I know that stuff like that was planted and made up as time went, you know, as time went along when they started this I call it lynching campaign.
It was a high tech lynching, just like unfortunately Clarence Thomas said that way back when. You may not have been around when he made that statement. A high tech lynching. I think that's a characterization you had never heard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That sounds like what happened because, like again, I keep hearing about, you know, you suspect this lawyer, your lawyer, you suspect him of collusion. Somebody's putting a little bug in his ear on the side or whatever. You know, what kind of madness is that? So, you know, it just begs that question there, and it keeps it out there. Mm-hmm. And the way things were handled, I got to think there had to have been a kind of a backroom meeting when all was quiet, and you know, you went back to wherever you had to go back to, and when you're away from everybody, they all got together. It smacks of collusion. Somebody was calling the signals, you know, type of thing. Because I listened to this, I'm thinking, this is not even a Class B movie out in Hollywood. This is who wrote that script, type of thing.
And I tell you, and as we speaking, things are coming back to me. There were two things, two funny things, not funny, but.
Well, I know what you mean.
but like things that my lawyer said. This particular lawyer told me.
Okay.
One of those things he said that the prosecutor seems like seems that he was made to do this. You know, somebody's making them to prosecute me.
Gotcha. Yeah, that were the puppet strings.
Yeah, and then when we were at I had two different dates of sentencing.
Okay.
The first day I had was being sentenced.
You still with me? Hello, Mr. Ford.
Mission and all this stuff, you know, was tremendously lower than what you trying to just say. Retention, you know, and so So it was delayed a whole 30 days. I guess the judge wanted to look at this or whatever. And so during my sentencing, the second time we were getting ready to go in the courtroom, he mentioned, he said, when I first, the lawyer, my lawyer, he said, when I first got this case and when I started meeting with them, it was all indications that all these charges were going to be dropped.
Wow.
I'm sitting up there, I'm, you know, ticked off. I'm sitting up there like, what happened? You know,
okay.
You know, and so all of that and all the things that happened, I do, you know, feel that I, you know, was scapegoated.
Okay. Apparently you're not by yourself, because I do remember in that, and I was taking notes on the interview with your mom. She said that whenever they got to the verdict part, they said after that happened, they said there were certain members of the jury that were in tears. I think the court stenographer was in tears. And I got to thinking, what's up with that?
Right.
You know, type of thing. Why they must have, well, they're right there at ground zero. They must have sensed something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw that or not, but they were in tears. I'm thinking,
I was a little out of it when I heard the verdict, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I can imagine.
I wasn't really being peaceful. Matter of fact, I called them all bastards, you know, so when the verdict slammed on the table. So, you know,
I mean, understand.
I could probably have a little laughing now, but then I was not laughing.
I know it. There was nothing funny at all. Like I say, ha ha ho funny. But I just thought that was kind of remarkable that, you know, usually whenever you see that, the jury's relieved, everybody's relieved, they kind of get up, like, yeah, shake hands, and they go on about the business. But to have some of them in tears, I mean, like, what did they know? What did they see? What did they hear? You know,
not to interrupt you.
No, go ahead. Hello, Mr. Ford?
Wait a minute. It was 12. I haven't, forgive me, I have not talked about this case in a while. So
I can imagine.
There were 11 females.
Yeah.
One male. There were, all right. So that was the 12.
Yep.
Then there were four alternates. Okay. The alternates had all four African American males and one Caucasian female.
Okay.
The 11 included.
I know that minority wise, we were underrepresented. We had to get the blankets that we put out there.
And that did not sound like, does that sound like a jury, my peers?
Not even close. Well, you can always, someone can feign colorblindness. You know, I'm colorblind. Yeah, right. Nobody in this society is colorblind. If they say that, they flat out lying.
Exactly. So I even have my theory on that. And it being so close to Christmas time, I figured they just wanted to get it up and done with and basically go to Christmas shopping,
mm-hmm.
And then even the prosecutor wanted me arrested right then and there. And the judge even said, look, it's Christmas, you know, so he didn't allow that to happen.
Yeah.
You know, why is that? I mean, you know, it's a several thing, you know, I can go on. And the system is just, you know, once you in the crosshairs, I don't know if you ever heard of this guy named Larry Jordan, as far as like courtrooms and how, you know, all of them, you at the mercy of the court, or, you know, it's just, you just don't have any say whatsoever. And that leads into like what the judge to allow in evidence and what he doesn't allow in evidence.
Mm.
I'm sorry, I'm jumping around.
No, that's okay. But, no, tell the story. It's best you can remember. I know it's been some years, but it's best you can remember. Mm-hmm. Hey, we need to hear it all because, you know, this may sound like humdrum to you because you went through it, you lived it. But some of us are like sitting back, like getting you with our mouth wide open thinking, what?
Mm-hmm. Well, it starts out with this email, this threatening email that I received after I was going to Strayer at the time.
Yeah.
And for my master's program. And then I had to go take a final test, a final. And then when I came back, this email was sent to me twice. And it was labeled, God will never forgive you, will never bless you, Ken. And it all went down to, oh, well, hey, we know who you are. You a police officer. You guys are no good. Supposedly been from some woman who had a husband that worked at NSA and they trying to find out who I am.
Huh.
And so I should not have the clearances that I have.
Oh, okay. And, I see where that's coming from. Yeah.
Yeah. And basically, I just need to, this was in the middle. I was dating this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we got into an argument.
Okay, you with us?
It took me some time to get to an NSA official to say, well, look, I received this threatening email. They threatening my career. They threatened to call, you know. Who, you know, the very next day.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got to a woman there.
Mm.
And she basically poo-pooed it. Like, nobody really can't get in contact with you here. You know. And I even say, look, I will bring you the email and show it to you.
Okay.
With the headers and footers all in it. And so... No, that's not necessary. You sound like you just got read the Riot Act and stuff like that.
Gosh.
And so then 6 weeks later, the FBI coming to my house.
I heard about that. That what a travesty. That's,
yeah.
The way I heard it, it's something like, you know, like a Class B movie.
Yeah. And... in my house, that FBI agent,
mm-hmm,
told me, we've been looking at you for a while. Well, what did you see me do but go to work and go to school?
That wasn't Thompson, was it?
Yes, that's exactly who it was.
Yeah, he stuck out. He stuck out in my mind. So I figured that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I'm sitting up there, well, you see, and then the only outside activity outside of that was when I met Miss Tucker.
Yes.
And if that's even her real name. And from the time I met her to the time the FBI raided my house, it was 8 weeks. 8 weeks.
Isn't that something? You anticipated my very next question was, if you don't mind, you know, who is Tanya Lil Shay Tucker, Tanya Miller, Tanya Stewart? Who is that? I think you just answered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's even, you know, I don't know what her real name was. She bounced all over the place between Alabama and Florida. I even saw information where found out, I don't know how reliable it was, she was paroled in May of that year, in 2003, but was in Washington, D.C. area in October 2003. I don't know how parole works. Like in a federal system, parole doesn't even exist. And I don't know what the, I know there's things you have to do on probation, you know. Parole, I don't know how that ran state by state. I don't know.
You got to report to the parole officer. I didn't think you could travel. I think you had that freedom of travel.
Right, yes. And so how was she able to land a job working in Maryland and then from another jurisdiction that you're on parole from? She told me she's working as a contractor for Bearing Point, but yeah, it's probably as, you know, one of these, I'm beginning to think that she's just a hit person and frame up and cover ups and stuff like that, you know?
Okay.
And even when I first was processed in prison, I had a counselor, she was African-American. She was looking at this thing and even mentioned, like, you know, do you know where she is now? I said, no, I didn't. From when I got arrested to my trial, I didn't see her until my trial, until she testified against me in my trial. And even the counselor was reading, whatever she was reading, she basically, you know, it's just expositive, but she said it just like this: somebody need to kick her ass, you know? You know, I'm sitting up there like, what does that say when you even getting this, that this is a bunch of BS?
That, you know, and it's interesting. I was going to ask you, did your attorney ever consider, since you took the stand, you know, really casting aspersions on her credibility, considering her very checkered past, you know, like, and whoever, she was the CI for who? The FBI, whoever figured that out?
Yeah, have not figured that out. They would never admit that she was a confidential informant. What they said was that she was a concerned citizen.
Wow.
what was that wording they used? It's just that they went out of their way to really cover her. She had her lies down packed. She was even caught on the stand. The way I was supposed to have been reported was that it was supposed to have been reported by her older sister. And the paperwork names of Kyla Walker.
Yeah.
And talked to some NSA representative and supposedly read a document, and they identified a person that worked for the NSA. But guess what papers those were? Know that's what it were. They were my recruitment papers. Once again, I got over the email, and that was the recruiting officer that I was dealing with before I got at NSA.
Wow.
A name that you recognize as being an NSA employee.
I tell you what, like I say, when I heard the testimony that you and your mom did and everything else, you know, there's an expression that we used to have at the Pentagon, you know, when things really get, you know, go whack and go get out of control, you know, it's a progression. You go from the sublime to the ridiculous. And then the next iteration, you go from the ridiculous to the surreal. As you know, the surreal expressions of the imagination are limited by reason. That phrase came right up when I was reading about Tanya. That thing popped in my mind. I'm thinking, it is so appropriate for this situation. Mm-hmm. From the ridiculous to the surreal.
Exactly.
It's crazy. But I tell you what, I characterized, as a matter of fact, I even wrote it out in the margins. I said, this woman is a train wreck. And I put an exclamation mark next to it. So you and I must have been the only one to notice that.
Yeah. And it's just even like when I was dating her for the 8 weeks, it was like, this is not the one, you know.
You knew that.
Yeah, and she was going through, because even she had a carpal tunnel operation while I was dating her. Then she even had a diabetic, like didn't have a sugar and I couldn't wake her up one day.
Wow.
Because one time
diabetic coma.
Diabetic coma. And this particular day I went and she was downstairs. I had a 3-level house.
Okay.
She was downstairs and then I went upstairs to take a shower. Then I came back down, sat there. She stood. I was like, dang, she's snoring a lot, you know. That's loud. I'm like, dang, go on. So I went to wake her up. I couldn't wake her up.
Wow.
So then I called 911.
And then
basically they knew what it was. And they knew how to, you know, and I'm sitting up there I was like, look, you need to go back. You need to go back to Florida. You need some medical attention. I cannot provide. I cannot do.
You called it.
And then even that night that she was, it got dark early.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time in January. And so she kept calling.
Okay. You swear this brother forward. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, it keep going in and out. And so
that's okay. No, we'll work with it.
Oh, okay. Then basically it ended up that she ended up spending the night and then we were going to go out early morning to go get those boxes.
Okay.
You know, pack up boxes.
Yeah.
And so then that's the same night. And I never forget what was playing on the teams that were playing. Every time when I see the Philadelphia Eagles and the Green Bay Packers play, I always think about that day.
Isn't that
that's
something?
Who was playing when they raided my house. It was a playoff game.
That's a horrible scar.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, it's just something else. Well, hey, I'm going to start to kind of like you just start. I'm asking very pointed questions there so we could start to wrap it up. I didn't want to just hold you like that too much longer and all. But I'm just curious now, in my work, when I was at the Joint Chiefs, I had 7 clearances above top secret. Matter of fact, my top 2 clearances were classified. You know, whenever mm-hmm. I go anywhere, I had to refer to, I have my tickets. You know, you didn't mention what the clearances was. So, but I was just wondering, like, how is classified handled? Because you're supposed to have boxes of this stuff and this, that, and the other thing. They said that they saw you drive away from NSA in a truck with 2 boxes. And then a lady swore on a stack of Bibles, no, you're in a sedan. There was no truck. And she even admitted, said, I know the difference between a car and a truck, said he didn't have it. But anyway, but the chain of custody for documents, because I'm thinking like you had quite a collection, you know, did you spirit them out of there? You know, in my line of work, especially when I flew air crew with B-52 bombers, from the time a top secret document is created until it's destroyed, you have a chain of custody. You could tell who all had their hands on it, when they had it, date and everything else. So I got to thinking, like, for you to walk off with all these boxes of stuff, how'd that happen? How'd you do that? And you didn't. I know you didn't. But what I'm saying is, how'd they justify that?
They just basically, what they did was, they said that the building I was working with the cameras weren't operating.
Wow.
And they said that's interesting. First, they said that there were no cameras nor guards at the loading dock. They said I pulled up to a loading dock, and that was unmanned and loaded up all these boxes. But then they were sitting up there saying, well, it was uncamered and unmanned. So happened. I got an award with this picture of this building on it that had cameras on the building. So I brought it in like maybe the third day of trial and said, hey, I didn't want to show my lawyer. I said, hey, I don't want to put anything in your hands, but what did you see? This is the last building I worked at.
How about
that? So it had cameras. So he took it to the prosecution And they looked at it and then they concocted a story that, oh, well, those cameras weren't up in operation. And I knew that.
That is so fishy.
How would I know that? You worked in like the Pentagon and things like that. I don't know the security. If you not, it's things are operated as need to know.
Yeah.
And how would I possibly know that if I did not work in the security section? I work security at the White House, not NSA. You know, there was no way in the world I could have possibly know that. I even knew of anybody that possibly knew that.
That like I said, the proof's in the pudding right there. You laid it out there. But see, they're being so deceptive, you know, and it's like they're playing dodgeball, you know, hey, you can't hit them type of thing. And, you know, they're like a Teflon dime. You know, nothing going to stick with them because they could explain away everything, you know, type of thing.
But they're on the camera,
it wasn't working. Yeah. I'd say that's remarkable. But another thing I thought about, because, you know, your mom, and then, of course, you mentioned too, like trying to get the right set of lawyers. Somebody that's probably not going to be, in collusion with, you know, the other guys, whatever. But I said, well, you know one thing, most things in the government, they'll have like, an overwatch, like an IG function. Like I think DOJ has an IG. Mm-hmm. I think the FBI has an IG too, you know, and to me, I kind of look at it like, your police departments, they all have internal affairs. They're completely separate from the operation and they're kind of like a watchdog. So I thought about it, would it be possible to go to any of them, like from the FBI or at the FBI, CIA, then I thought about it. If it's all part of a big collusion, it won't matter.
Right. Because here's the thing, even in that courtroom, you realize that everybody, even your paid lawyer, all the way up to the judge, see, they're officers of the court. They're lawyer to the court. They're not lawyer to you. I was even explaining this to lawyers that I was in prison with, that they are friends amongst each other. That's how they make clients come and go, but they have to stay with that system. Has to stay. That's their bread and butter. So they're going to be loyal to that no matter what the situation is, innocent, guilty, or otherwise. They loyal to the system. They not loyal to justice of the defendant.
And that's regrettable because you kind of get that. You feel that theme. I've heard it before. As again, I mentioned that lawyer that I work with, it's been a couple months ago. He said the same thing. It's just like, you know, it said they scratch your back, you scratch your back, you know, move along to go along type of thing. If someone gets crushed under the weight, well, hey, you know, you knew it was going to be a dirty fight when you got into it type of thing. But and one other comment, because you had mentioned someone who had worked with and you had been in his courtroom, that I was working on another issue, and I recognized the name right away. I kind of thought that at the time the guy was a nice guy, but Judge Peter Massetti. You know, I heard that name and I thought about it, but then I heard some of the things, some of the hijinks he came up with, some of the things that he tricks he pulled or whatever, and I got to thinking, wow. But it seems to me like from his high position being, you know, from the bench, he reminds me, and I don't know if you're a sci-fi fan or not, but you know, there was a movie classic called Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. There was one iconic expression in that movie that fits Judge Massetti. They had the steel cage fights, and they had the little hunchback referee walking around. His iconic expression was, "Don't worry about the rules because there are none." And I got to thinking, that fits this situation here. Don't worry about the rules, there are none. You know, hey, if it feels good, do it.
Right, exactly.
It's not funny. I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because, oh my God. Yeah, just a lot of back channel stuff was going on. You know, you could tell it as you saw your lawyer starting to melt away, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like it, though, you know, it wasn't the burden of anything. It was the fact that, you know, somebody got to him.
Yeah, exactly. They threatened his career. I recall he said that he wrote up a brief or something and they threatened him and said it was some classified information in it that they threatened to lock him up of having and exposing classified information.
He got the message loud and clear. So, you know, you can see the change in the tides and whatnot, but I tell you what, I've thoroughly enjoyed this, but I'm just kind of curious though. Cause again, I remember that comment that you made about, hey, after you got out of prison, after you're going to just do some things, turn some things around, going to try to change the world. You're not out there by yourself, buddy, because I'm out there with you. But now, what are you doing now? Because I know this has been a couple of years ago, what we're talking about, but what are you doing now?
Right now, I'm just working. The thing that, and you would know, like just resources and income. I'm just working, little jobs here and there. I can't do what I was trained to do.
Yeah.
I'm a convicted felon.
Wow.
So, I mean, my options are limited. We're involved in some startups. And of course, when you're trying to do startup, resources come limited in that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's just day to day.
There's no path to expunging the record. I guess that's a nonsense thing that I just said.
Yeah. Cause in a federal, you can't expunge federal charges. You can only expunge state charges.
Okay. Good point.
And then, I mean, a pardon, you can get pardoned federal charges. And then even with this, I stopped dealing with them with these like one-stop job in Prince George's County.
Okay.
And I just felt with them, they were just trying to basically say, well, look, just settle on being a backbreaker laborer and we're going to work you with no real benefits and no path,
Wow.
You just put money in your pocket. And see, one thing, I was kind of different as far as myself was, they could not really jam me is because I don't have any biological children. So
okay.
They couldn't jam me, like I've seen that they jam a lot of our brothers out there.
Oh yeah.
They really, I've seen them jam them with basically, you don't have a choice. You either do this or you get incarcerated for non-support.
Wow. One thing, and all this, with all that you were trained to do, the path that you made for yourself before with the architects of your fall, you kind of, remind me, I don't know, and seriously, your situation, you are by any other name, you're Colin Kaepernick. All this that could be utilized, but they just turn a blind eye to it. And they know it's out there. They know you're out there. They know what you're capable of, as far as assistance, but they're going to hold on to that line. And that's so unfortunate.
Yes.
Really is. What's your plans for the future? I know you've been talking around that. You were saying that you're going to assist in certain things. The first thing that popped in my mind was the Innocence Project. If you can help some people already incarcerated trying to get out of jail, because I've seen some documentaries on things that they do. So I thought about it, but I don't know if that's ever occurred to you, or maybe that's just not even in your wheelhouse.
I'm willing, because it was one thing I tried to get. Somebody put a job announcement on it wasn't an Innocent Project, but it escapes me for what it was. It was a few years ago.
Okay.
I applied, but I never heard anything back from and that was very interesting as far as what they were doing, as far as justice reform and criminal reform and stuff like that was interesting. As far as getting into a group, I could not get into a steady group to get into something like that.
Yes.
And then once again, I'm worried about, income and, even just having a few bucks in my pocket, a lot of these places, I will still have to get to those places which require funding.
I got you. I'm just curious also, as I'm about to close out and all, I saw your book and I've got to get it, Weapons of Mass Deception. Then I saw, by James Lowther. Then my imagination, I went back to the Pentagon. I'm thinking, there is no such person. But then again, I said, well, I'll let you explain that, because I'm thinking, wait a minute, maybe there's another book out there by, Kenneth Wayne Ford. I'm thinking, you know, then I was told, no, that's the book. I said, yes. I figured out the rest of the story.
Yes, at the time, he's actually a pastor, and a pastor James Lowder, a Caucasian male, I grew up with his two oldest sons, and they used to live in the next street over.
Okay.
And so he wrote a few books. He usually writes about Christian books and things like that, but he took on this task.
Okay.
And we had to change the names. I didn't go by my name.
Yeah.
I can imagine why. Made up, you know. And so that's how that book is. I didn't write. He's the author. I just told my story.
There you go.
Biography. Yeah.
I know it. And what a story it is. I am so happy to be able to get you, because when we first talked about it, I said, you know, I talked to my producer. I said, now, what's the chance of us actually catching this guy? He called me back like it says, hey, he's rip-roaring ready to go. I'm thinking, we're talking about the same guy. He said, yes. Yeah. Oh, man. I'm going to pump this up. I'm looking forward to this. But I tell you what, you know, believe it or not, you know, as I heard the testimonies for, you know, the all three parts, your mom, yours, man, I'm proud of you, brother. I really am. I know that, Kenneth Wayne Ford Sr. and Gloria proud of you. I know grandma looking down, and I heard about her situation too. I know she's proud of you, man. You got a whole bunch of people out there. And with this podcast, what we got with the hashtag Blue and Green, your story's going to get around there. You might get some play out of this one too. So, and I certainly hope so, because you deserve it, man. I tell you what, you deserve it. So if I ever start this little startup company I'm thinking about doing, like, we definitely going to hire Gloria. I mean, you know, and you, man, I tell you what, I'll take you on like it. So, hey, no interview, no resume. Come on, man. Let's do this. I sure appreciate it. Thank you so much, man, for allowing me to do this. This has been my honor to be able to do this for you and for the cause.
Exactly.
You bet. Well, hey, I'm going to say goodbye. God bless you. Look at, hey, stay healthy out there, because there's some strange times. So stay healthy. Oh, yeah. And be safe. Be safe, brother.
Okay. Thank you for having me, Major Davis.
You bet. Take care.
You do as well.
Bye-bye. You bet. Bye-bye.